Bronwyn's just had a seat right now. He's come straight to studio. How are you doing, Bronwyn?
Great, thanks. And you?
Welcome to the show. Nice to have you on 101.9 Chai FM.
Did you bring your cyborg with you?
Well, not quite. No, I'm not wearing my contact lenses today.
No. I had to train your cyborg, right?
Maybe you forgot to charge it last night.
So, Bronwyn, in case you don't know, she is a trends translator at Flaxman Trends. First of all, how do you become a trendist? Like, what did you study at university to say, oh, I know things in the future that other people don't?
Well, I started out doing marketing, of all things. Okay. But I suppose that gives you a perspective onto what people are into and what people like. And you have to actually figure out how to persuade people to buy things. So you have to start learning a bit about society to do that. But I've also studied economics, and I'm currently doing future studies with UCT, so I'm getting my official futurist credentials. I'll be allowed to talk about these things.
Is that like astrology?
Not really, no. The whole thing of professional futurism is not about predicting the future. It's rather about anticipating what could possibly happen and then helping people to prepare for whatever those eventualities are.
Howard, the answer to is that like astrology is never yes. So that's how you got into futurism. I mean, I think probably the most overused South African phrase at the moment is the fourth industrial revolution.
Oh, yes.
And there's all sorts of – talks about the convergence of all sorts of technologies that are going to make our lives either better or considerably worse, depending on who you like to talk to. Because, you know, one of the things we have at the moment is a 27% unemployment rate.
Yes.
And people are very worried that things like AI are going to replace people. I mean, you can now get an AI secretary. For like $27 a month, which is a great deal less than you have to pay a human.
And why wouldn't you do that if you wanted to help hire someone to help you with your work? So you can't even blame the incentives that are going on behind that. But yes, that is an issue, and it is more of an issue for certain professions than for other professions. In fact, the professions that are most at risk of automation through the fourth industrial revolution, if you want to use that terribly.
There were air
term.
Quotes for those people listening rather than
you could actually
yes.
hear them. It was quite remarkable. Yeah.
But the point is that the most automatable professionals are not your blue collar worker jobs, they're actually your professional professions.
Yeah,
so knowledge worker professions. Yeah. Because anything that can be uploaded into a spreadsheet and replicated, so any job that requires memorizing lots and lots of information and then regurgitating it, however complex way that might be, those jobs can be put into a spreadsheet and automated through a machine process.
So, I mean, the debate always is there going to be a point zero, right? Will there be a thing where the entire system is so automated that nobody ever has a job and we all have to live on a universal income grant?
I don't think so. I think that the fearmongers would have you say that, and people that want to push a universal basic income agenda would definitely agree with that statement. But that's just simply not the fact, because at the moment we are warm flesh and blood bodies, and human beings are irrational, creative beings. And what we've tried to do over the course of the industrial revolution, the real industrial revolution, we started giving people salaries and jobs and functions as tools, is we tried to turn humans into more like machines, to become more efficient, more optimized. Now, unfortunately, by doing that, we were able to generate a lot of prosperity and productivity for the human race, but it also meant that we put ourselves at risk of going into competition with actual machines who can machine better than humans can machine.
Right.
And what we're going to find is that there will be some sort of a pendulum swing where we kind of end up realizing we are actually human beings. We are walking around here, we live, we die, at least we have done throughout the course of history to date, despite what the transhumanists would have you say. And we have to do something with our time here on Earth. So we're already seeing that sort of swing with the millennial generation and the Gen Z generation coming up behind them, in that goal of getting a salary and becoming a cog in the corporate industrial machine is sort of starting to break down. We're seeing people make different choices about what they're going to do with their lives. We even see people quitting their jobs as an accountant or lawyer and then going to bake bread and actually making just as much money as they did before, because suddenly we're valuing that human touch, that artisanal presence. And that's a bit of a cheesy example, but that's just an illustration of how we have to do something with ourselves.
Where's the space for human creativity? I mean, I saw a robot that can paint a Picasso in 2 minutes. Like, it literally will look at the Picasso and paint. So if I'm an artist, that's about the most creative thing I can possibly be. And here I have an artist out painting me. So where is the space for human creativity? Because that's always the argument of the sort of AI positive people is that, well, if you're more creative and get more creative, because that's the way to beat the machines. But it sounds to me like they're even beating us on that score.
Well, they're beating us at doing stuff, but there's a difference between creativity in terms of economic creativity and how to make a more efficient painting,
right,
and actual connection-based creativity, the things that actually give you an emotional connection with people. Loneliness is one of the biggest issues of our 21st century lives. There's a whole term for it now in Japan, the hikikomori people who go into their rooms and don't ever come out. They live completely online, completely isolated from society. There's actually an epidemic of this going on in Japan and South Korea. And when you start getting to that point, we've kind of reached the peak of what you can achieve through just automating more and more and more stuff.
Yeah.
Because that if everyone falls into that trap, then we're actually just going to go extinct. So we have to really make a choice.
All right, let's move away from the economics for a second, because that's kind of boring. I want to know about the fun stuff, right? We have people who are busy implanting chips in their brains. You know, I have a cell phone now. I don't see why it shouldn't just stick into my palm. You know, why do I have to lug this thing around in my pocket? You know, how far are we before we start seeing human hardware, you know, being a thing?
Oh, it's already, yeah, it absolutely is. If you just do a little bit of research on it,
for Benji,
cyborgs.
For human hardware, all he needs is Viagra.
Howard, very early on in the morning, there are kids going to school. Thank you very much.
The kids are luckily already in school.
Well, they should be anyway, right?
But what does this practically mean? Yeah. Like, put yourself 10 years into the future. How is our life different?
10 years into the future, I don't think we'll see much different on a superficial level. We will be doing different jobs. Like that shift is already happening. Like you didn't have social media managers 10 years ago, and they're going to be extinct in another 10 years. That half life of the sort of functions that we're doing and the jobs that we have is definitely going to speed up. But the sort of technologies we see now are starting to get traction, but it's going to take more than 10 years to see the big changes that we see coming. The things like actually connected humans, like internet connected humans with those chips integrated into our bodies, are coming, and they are slowly starting to drip into society. We're already seeing law firms recommending how businesses can encourage their staff to get chipped in the US and in the UK, which is a bit creepy. It's a bit like branding your slave, right?
For what purpose? I mean, why would a law firm want you to chip your employee?
Well, in theory, the way that the employee is told that it's going to work is that you can then get rid of your access card and you can just get access to everything in the building just by swiping your hand. The benefit to the employer is great, because you can control access to various parts of your building, to various computers and machines, and you can make sure that no one's swapping access cards or giving the wrong person access to different things. There's definitely a security level there. But there are privacy issues too. Those sort of chips can be hacked within a 3-meter radius, which could get a little bit interesting.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to keep talking about being hacked and finding out, you know, who's spying on you. But for the moment, let's check out the news headlines with Zanati Guma. Zanati, what is there?
In your headlines, at least 4 people injured in Swiss avalanche. 240 rescuers are continuing to search the scene for missing people. UK said to deprive ISIS teenager of citizenship. She left London in 2015 to join ISIS in Syria at age 15. Tito Mboweni to deliver budget speech. He's under pressure to bail out the state power utility Eskom. And baby gains vision after intricate surgery. She will be 6 months old this week. Catch the full bulletin at 9.
Thank you so much, Zanati, for bringing us that news headlines, which will in fact be back at 9, as she says. We are talking to, don't know where that came from, we're talking to Bronwyn Williams today. She is a trends translator at Fluxman Trends, and we're finding out why chips are not just things you're finding in a Doritos packet anymore. You might be finding it in your arm if you're not careful. What about stuff that's less like, okay, corporate machinery? Like, when am I going to be able to shoot a laser out my eye, which is going to help me, like, focus in on something far in the distance? Is that also a thing that's coming?
It's definitely happening. If you want to see what's going on there, Epicenter in Sweden is kind of the epicenter of where this is all going down. They're basically like an incubator / lab where citizens and companies get together to work on various different projects, and quite a lot of their projects at the moment are looking at things like transhumanism and biohacking and all of that. So people are using their own skills to design their own bodies and give themselves the superpowers that they want for themselves. Now, of course, some of the people in these incubators are artists, so they come up with a bit more creative, maybe less commercially successful ways to biohack themselves. Like there's one girl who has implanted a chip in her body that allows her to feel all the earthquakes that go on in the world to help with her performance art. So you could do that if you wanted to. Or you could be like the cyborg guy, Rob Spence. He's the film director who lost an eye in an accident, then replaced it with a film camera. So now he doesn't have to walk around with his camera when he makes movies. He can just sort of film them with his eyes. So technically, you can do pretty much anything you want, but of course, letting anyone design themselves exactly the way they want to, we could end up with some pretty interesting people. If you look at the way people dress, if you could do that with your body too, it could get quite interesting out there.
But practically, when am I going to have a driverless car? When is that going to be mainstream?
Well, it depends on where you live. I mean, if you live in somewhere like Dubai or Finland, you could get one this year if you liked.
But when
technically that's Main Street. That's what we're looking for, right there.
In places like South Africa, that's not going to happen anytime soon, not the way our road networks are designed, not the way our population is distributed, and not the way the costs of these sort of vehicles are. But in certain high-tech cities, this is happening right now as we speak. This is not something that's coming. It's come.
To be perfectly honest, as soon as a driverless car can go up and down Louis Botha Avenue twice without dinging into anything, I'm there. I've sold my car and I'm there. Like, I'll take it wherever it wants to go.
Well, in the UK, they did a test. They didn't announce it. They put some of these driverless cars on the UK roads this year. So they only kind of told people after they'd been driving around for a bit. So who knows? Maybe our government's got some guys testing this. Although I don't honestly believe that's happening right here, right now.
But who knows?
Who knows? It could be.
Judging how poorly people are driving, they clearly are not driverless cars.
Yeah. I mean, I saw a taxi yesterday. There's an interesting video going around with the taxi with 48 people.
Yes.
In the taxi, most of them children, which was a little bit horrifying.
But the real question is, when do these technologies become mainstream? Not that they do exist, there are 5 vehicles on the road in the UK, but when do they actually change fundamentally the way we're living?
They change it slowly, just like the actual motor vehicles. You start off with just a couple of them on the road, and then they slide flag bearers walking in front of the cars, and people are like, no, this is never going to take off, because of course, the car can't really take off if it can only go as fast as the guy literally walking in front of the car. And we kind of at that point right now with driverless vehicles, the technology exists. We can go out and buy one if we wanted to. We wouldn't be allowed to drive it on our roads right now. But the big stumbling block there is more to do with your legislation and your government regulation to say, when is this actually going to be allowed? Now, when it comes to platform-based internet technology, the big tech companies can build it, break it, and then wait for legislation to catch up with them. When it comes to physical technology, there are bigger actual barriers to rolling this out. So I would say we're going to start seeing the first phase to getting towards these autonomous vehicles will actually be the advent of electric vehicles being rolled out. So now Shell Garages is talking about this year putting electric charging stations into our garages here. So that would kind of have to happen because I don't think anyone's building a petrol or diesel-based autonomous vehicle. So we kind of have to have the infrastructure to actually run the cars before we start worrying about replacing the drivers.
We actually have to have the electricity to be able to charge the cars.
But let's not talk about that. It's just too depressing this early in the morning if you're still stuck in traffic.
Any industrial revolution, we need to get there before the fourth one. So, Bronwyn, I mean, if someone wants to find out how they'll be able to pay, you know, for their genetically modified kawaii vanilla shake using a chip and paying in bitcoins, where is like more information that you can find if you're interested in these sorts of things? I mean, are there books out there? Or
absolutely. If you're talking about the sort of chips and things, Yuval Harari's Homo Deus and all of that, his books are quite great for that sort of thing. In terms of what's going on with the actual biohacking, the Epicenter website, that incubator in Sweden is a great place because they've just got a lot of ideas coming out there, so you can have a look there. Our website, flextrends.com, we've got a few articles we put out on the more interesting stuff, so you don't have to filter through all the vast tranches of information on the internet today. You can just get to what we think is interesting and relevant for South African businesses right here, right now. But there's a lot of information out there, and there's also a lot of conspiracy theories, there's a lot of nonsense, but there's also a lot of potential that could happen.
What are the 3 big trends that we have to look out for?
Well, I would say right now, this whole thing of transhumanism is a big trend. It's not going to affect us, you and me sitting in this room so much, but it's absolutely going to affect our children. When you start considering the economic inequality around the world and the literacy inequality around the world, and then you consider that parents in China are already creating designer babies that they can select genetic traits before that embryo is even implanted, and you compare that to someone that will never, or a country that either refuses to allow those sort of procedures or where people cannot afford those very expensive procedures. And suddenly within a generation, you have a generation of literal supermen and women walking around amongst our bog standard naturally evolved children. So you're going to have naturally produced humans competing against intelligently designed and selected humans.
Okay, so
and that's a long-term trend, but it's something that's happening right now.
So trend number one is genetically modified superhumans.
Yes, or genetic inequality will be the next, that battlefield of the future.
Well, there's genetic inequality. One can't all be as good-looking as Benji Shulman.
That is true. So true. But think about that accelerated to a vast degree.
It's very hard to imagine that. And trend number
next
two.
Next one would be the massive trade-off between privacy and security we're seeing around the world. So we can talk about this in terms of things like corporate surveillance from companies like Discovery, who want their pound of flesh and all of your bank details and your fitness details. They want you to wear an ankle monitor to tell you where you are and what you're doing at all times in order to gain access to their products.
Well, there goes, Benji, your Discovery advertising.
Yeah, and on the other side, well, depends on if you want to be a shareholder there or not. It's something to be aware of, and that's lots of companies are doing that. And the other side is state surveillance. So if you look at what's happening in places like the EU and the UK, which has, I think, a camera for one in every three citizens in the UK, there's that many surveillance cameras, state-run, which is quite crazy. And China has gone all the way to having their social credit scores, which are made up of everything to do with your life, your digital and your physical life, from facial recognition databases to track where you are physically, to credit records that look at whether you owe people money or not. There's actually like an app. It's almost like the Grindr of debtors. So if you install this app on your phone, it'll tell you if anyone owes you money within a 300-meter radius. Okay, so
swipe left.
Yeah, swipe left. Or go run to him. Go run and catch your money. So that sort of surveillance and that trade-off between privacy and security is quite interesting, because the choices that we make, all these sort of trade-offs that we're giving away our data and our privacy, they're like vampires. We have to invite them over the threshold before they come and drain us.
Most of these things, they say, use us for free, but give us your data.
Yes, yes.
If you're not paying for the product, you are the product. That's always the rules. Bronwyn, thank you so much.
Or trend number three.
Oh, you want a third trend?
Wow. Okay. We did ask for three.
That's true.
You did ask for three. Well, the third trend that we're tracking in our office right now is Generation Z. So millennials are old. I'm a millennial. I'm a mom. In fact, there's a really grandparent millennial. So let's stop talking about millennials and start talking about Gen Z. So Gen Z is quite interesting. In South Africa, they are the born free generation. Globally, they are hugely activist generations. So we've seen the survivors of the Parkland school massacre getting on the front page of Time magazine talking about gun rights and ownership there in the States. This is a generation that's going to actually do things, whereas millennials did a lot of complaining and a lot of whining about the boomers. Sorry, I know it's my generation, I can say this. But this generation is going to do things. Lucky you. So they definitely want to watch. And if you're an employer, they might not even want your jobs. So that's going to be quite interesting.
Well, they're not coming for your jobs. Bronwyn, that was absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for coming in and letting us know that the next person who takes us might be a superhuman being surveilled by, a Generation Xer. Much appreciated. Go check out Bronwyn Williams, Trend Translator at Flux Trends. Advert time and then a bit of music by some other superhumans on our side.